Blog Talk Radio. This podcast is brought to you by the Phantom Gallery Chicago Network, an artist-run project that exhibits the non-traditional gallery setting. The Phantom Gallery looks at how the city influences art and how artists transform the city by contributing to civic dialogue and quality of life. These installations produce creative conversations. I'm your host, Alpha Bhutan. Thank you for listening. Good morning.
Hello,
and welcome. Hi, how are you today?
I'm doing great.
Great.
Looking forward to getting through this.
Okay. This morning we have Trish Williams, and she's here to discuss cloth-based narratives and its traditions. That's the theme of our conversation today. So, Trish, tell me something about yourself.
Born in Chicago, raised in Chicago, love Chicago, currently living in Peoria, but have been in love with all things fabric, textiles, since the age of five. Watching my grandmothers and my great-grandmother and my mother work with textiles, be it quilting, sewing, garments, you know, crocheting, knitting, those kinds of things. So fell in love with fabric at the age of five and been on that road ever since. My grandmothers and great-mothers, they did traditional quilting. So I didn't know anything about narrative quilting or art quilting until 97 when I saw a book called The Communion of the Spirits about African-American quilt making in Chicago and just fell in love with the narrative form of quilting.
Tell us, what's the difference? You mentioned traditional quilting, and what is traditional quilting? What is your definition?
Well, the quilts we make for beds, for covering.
Oh, okay.
When my grandmothers, they and great grandmothers, they called it cover. They didn't even give it the name of quilting. It was cover. They were making cover, and I can remember, especially with the great grandmother, once when all the women got together outside because it was warm and it was in Mississippi. And they were quilting together to finish different tops and quilt tops that they had, different members had made. And I was fascinated, you know, with the fact that they were all together and all this color, you know, all the food, because everybody brought a dish. And just them as a unit creating a piece. And I was in love with that. But I didn't get into quilting until 1997 when I saw that book, The Communion of the Spirits. And that book is by Roland Freeman, and it talks about African-American quilt making here in the U.S. And the beginning of that book, there were images that looked like my grandmother, women that looked like my big mama. The quilts looked like the kind of quilts they made, you know. It was cover, you know. They used old clothing. My paternal grandmother, if she had store-bought yard goods, she made special quilts, and we did not sleep under those. Those were for guests and company, you know, because those had the store-bought or either the fabrics from the feed sacks that my grandfather would buy feed for the different livestock. She would take that fabric from the feed sacks and make quilts. But in 97, I saw that book, and I did not realize you could make quilts for the wall. In the middle of that book, I saw women that looked like me and that were making art quilts, and there were figures and dancers and all kinds of things going on in these quilts, and I knew that that was what I was supposed to do, you know, because of my love for all things textiles since the age of five. I knew that was me. That was me, that I could create art with fabric and not just with paints and crayons and pastels and those things, I could use fabric to create art that would be on the wall and not for the beds.
Well, you know, it's interesting that you're mentioning Roland L. Freeman. I have an article on him where he talks about more than just something to keep you warm. And it was African-American quilters and their stories. And he went down and photographed Mississippi Folk Life Project. And that's interesting to say that, you know, your grandmothers and great-grandmothers were a part of that history. In his work, he used text and photographs. You know, and I noticed that in one of your quilts, we had on the bottom, and it was the quilt that you had in the exhibition that you just finished at the Center, Contemporary Arts Center. Do you know that? You know, talk a little bit about that art piece. It was in Brave Enough to Be It, was your exhibition that happened.
I love mixing the technology with the textiles. And that piece was, well, I had quite a couple of pieces that was in that exhibit, Brave Enough to Be It, that dealt with using technology to create fabric that then I could quilt. You know, the piece that you were talking about is by was in honor of a woman named Deborah Donner, who had been and during George Floyd and all of that, I was concerned about how many women other than Breonna Taylor, who we knew, or Sandra Bland. Those at that time, I think for me, were the only two women that I knew. But I found this story about Deborah. And the photograph of Deborah was just so bold, and the smile on her face was just so, and I'm like, why did they kill her? Well, in reading the story, I learned that she had some mental health issues, and the police were aware of it. They had been called several times to her home, but this particular time when they came, they killed her. And so I was just shocked because the day that they killed her, it was my mother's birthday. The age that she was the same age I was at that time. And it just, it blew me away that I never heard her story before. So I digitally manipulated the image and had it printed on whole cloth. And then added some paint, some crayons and fabric markers to enhance what I had printed on the cloth, and then quilted her because I wanted to tell her story. So, but at the same time, I wanted to digitize her image so that it drew you to her. And the piece I'm working on now for this public art commission is, again, one of those kind of processes. I love being able to use my computer wherever I can to create my own quality.
So on the bottom of that piece, you had protest signs.
Again,
printed
from my computer. I create those protest signs and I add them. Loving the mixing of the two crafts, you know. And now quilting has grown into such a large business, you know. COVID has shut some things down, but it is a billion-dollar industry, and people are not aware of it if you're not into quilting and textiles and art quilts. Even go beyond that because there are some textile artists that paint the whole cloth, just like your wonderful paintings, and then they actually quilt them. There are machines that you can program what kind of quilting stitches you want, and it will do it for you. All you have to do is change the thread, you know. I like being more hands-on. I like the repetitive motion that I use in my style of quilting because it reminds me of the Midwest. I am a true Midwesterner, and I've learned that even more moving to Peoria. The topography of the ebbs and flows of the landscape, the water, the sky, I'm thinking of all of that while I'm working. You know, it's meditation for me, you know. And that piece, even though it was an ugly story for me, if that makes sense.
Well, it does. And that you mentioned, you know, the in the context of your space and where you are in, you know, talking about the skies and the landscape and the water, and that's really transparent in your work, you know, with the way you have. And I've always thought that you created your own fabric for your skies. Are you still doing that with your?
Yeah, I'm doing more of that now. I love dyeing fabric. I love the idea that I made that fabric, you know. And sometimes I'm forced to create a fabric because I can't find what I want. So my painting skills will come into to the forefront, or I'm dyeing fabrics. I love that part of the process too. That There are several pieces where I made all the fabric, you know, be it painted or dyed, and not so much because of pride, but because of satisfaction that I know that I had something to do with each piece of that fabric that was included, you know. I'm a very tactile person.
You know, and I like the way, you know, love the way you talk about the meditativeness in working with your hands and sewing and creating that piece. And it's really, you know, like that it really comes out and it stands out, and that's what makes your artwork so and your textile work so prolific, if I may say. Yeah, you know, kind of like I was going to ask you this question, but you kind of answered it already. And we talk about, you know, when people look at textile work, you know, and the quilting work, they don't understand or look at how the body of work intersects with the idea of art and social justice and our tactical urbanism. And so those are some what I call unanticipated impacts, you know. Do you want to expand on that, or you think we already covered that by?
My work is always about, and I didn't realize it, it's about my culture, my community, and my environment, you know. And so whatever is going on in the world, some kind of way ends up in my work. And because I'm a part of a large group, the Women of Colors Quilters Network, formed by Dr. Carolyn Masfumi, all the exhibitions that she curates, we have to deal with those themes, those topics. Our quilts tell stories, you know, and we are the story because all of them focus on us as African-Americans living in America. You know, so we tell our history, and we are the gatekeepers of our history now more than ever. I'm loving it that can tell our stories, and folks sometimes don't want to accept or believe that it's true, but we know, you know, and we share that. We share that. I didn't realize I was. And I don't know how I didn't. In the beginning, I didn't realize I was so political.
Oh, no?
No, I didn't. Because in the beginning, I was doing traditional clothes. I just wasn't using traditional fabrics. I was using satins and lace and suede and even a I joined a quilting guild in Chicago, and even some of them, you know, was like, oh, isn't she special? Because I didn't always use cotton, you know. But that I learned that the traditional quilters are not always excited about the art quilters. Because I know quilters that will cover their whole quilts with found objects, you know. I'm like a magpie when I'm walking around or driving around. If I see something, I got to stop and get it. You know, I got to add it to my work. Where? I don't know, but I know I need that piece to add to my work. It makes it difficult when you're trying to pieces for exhibitions, you know, or trying not to have the metal object pierce your fabric in some form during shipping, you know. But I love
when you're talking you're talking about shipping work. Let's get on to your, you know, I felt like one of your, that I can recall, one of your first public art pieces was at the police station in North Lawndale at the new precinct.
Ah, that was Austin, in my neighborhood, down the street from where I lived, and I was excited about that at the 15th District. And a friend was at a meeting and with some city planning stuff going on, and she reached out to me and asked me, would I like to be a part of a public art piece in the city and in Chicago? And I told her, yeah, because I didn't know about the 1% project, that 1% of all buildings, you know. I wondered how public art got into those spaces, but there was a program. I don't know if it still exists. But 1% of the budget was for the art. So when she suggested me, I told her, sure, you know, I couldn't see. At first I'm like, okay, God, how is a quilt going to work in a police department? Spend a lot of time researching my community and talk about, again, that topography thing that I like, the ebbing and flowing of communities in Chicago as I would drive the boulevards or spin on the lakefront or listen to the news about the disparities between different communities, you know, the west side versus the south side versus the north side. I mean, you know, all that was showing up in that piece. And so I chose to use the rainbow because Chicago is a very diverse city, even though it's very segregated communities. I chose to use all those colors of the rainbow. And I always thought that the police band was black and white. But one of the police officers told me, no, it was navy and white. But I included that. And I wanted something very abstract for the 15th District because I thought about all the things that was going on in a police department. But then they had this community room. So I wanted some ebbing and flowing and come togetherness in that piece. But I also created a smaller that led to that room that was a map of Austin, the community that I was living in, and it had quite a few historical images that I created photo transfers and added to, but again, in that same palette of the rainbow and the black and white. And it was a big hoop for me to have a piece in my neighborhood, you know, and in a police department. That I could never get past that idea that it was in a police department. And that was my first public art commission. But then a couple of months later, a senior building, community building, was being built in my neighborhood. And they wanted some pieces from me. But the program, the 1% program, only allowed you to have, at that time, one commission in one community, you know. But
right.
Thank God for, and I loved him before, but I loved him even more. Richard Hunt was on that panel, and he told the rest of the panelists to give the people what they want. If they want her, let her work be there, too. So I was able to get that commission, too. So I was very excited about being in my community, you know, and being a lover of public art. I love driving around Chicago for sure. But anywhere where I am, whatever city I'm visiting, I always get a kick out of the public art and the fact that quilts could be accepted in those spaces was even more exciting to me. And there are some that are traditional quilts, just as beautiful as any medieval tapestries hanging in any castle, you know, that are hanging on walls. And I admire and appreciate them because that takes a lot of skill. And
exactly. It does.
Yeah,
it
does.
And so that answered, we answered that question on in terms of what responsibility do artists have to display the times in their art, and how do artists impact their environment and contribute to the overall vitality of a city? And you gave just a, you know, perfect example. You and I first met, and I'm correct me if I'm wrong, that we probably crossed paths and knew each other before, but we both served on the East Garfield Park New Communities Program under the, you know, Art and Culture Committee.
Oh,
and we're both
about,
published in that.
In the Golden Dome area?
Yes.
What was that at? I can't remember. And that was through Livette Haynes, wasn't it?
But after that, it was over under at the Garfield Park Conservatory, where we served on as co-chairs, and we were working on the New Communities Program together. We're both published in their publication, you know, and we started the Phantom Galleries. You were part of the first Phantom Galleries that I did over in East Garfield Park when I lived on the west side at the Switching Station Artist Loft, you know, and you were instrumental in kind of helping to launch that.
A wonderful idea that you could use vacant spaces like that. You know what I'm saying? And set up those galleries. I thought that was wonderful, you know? And quite a few people got exposed to, especially the art quilting. When we set up that space, I don't know how many people came into that space and thought it was a regular gallery. And it was just three of us showing our work, you know? And
well,
that
you curated
really,
that as well. And you were with, do you remember the other two artists?
I did. And just being able to do that, even the show we did at the bank, you know, that was impressive. Was that the Austin Bank, I think it was?
That was ABC Bank of Austin?
Right. I enjoyed being there, you know, because we exposed people to all different kinds of art, you know, and it wasn't just the textiles and the quilting, but, you know, we had painters. I mean, when we did the show in the old, with Murphy Hill, that was amazing. The show that you curated there, that was just amazing because we had people from all over the city to come and view that exhibition. Yeah.
And Murphy Hill Gallery was, Murphy Hill Gallery was a 30,000 square foot space in the old Sears and Roebuck administration office. And it was actually a pop-up. It was underground. And it lasted for like 5 years in that building until Center Stage bought it out, for part of their, where they do a lot of filming over there, and they kind of bought that place out, and the gallery closed down. But they had a good run. And you're saying, and Bill curated 30,000 square feet of space.
That
it
was
beautiful.
A wonderful
it was
space.
Always a Yeah, it was always a aha moment when you walked in the door, you know, and it was and it had so much potential, you know. And he mixed the greening of the space with bringing in these very and setting up these very exotic, you know, like transitional rooms. But you had plant life in the middle of that, you know. So it was a gorgeous space, and our work that you curated in that space, because you came in and always were a part of you know, the curatorial. Practice here with the Phantom Gallery, and I just and you again. You were on that first wave of galleries that opened up and brought a lot of attention, you know, to what artists were doing on the West Side, and then also the narrative.
Excuse me, but that was one of my main things of wanting to do, because I would travel throughout the whole city, going to different art venues. But I remember in the 60s that there was a lot of art and music in on the West Side, and it kind of died after the riot, you know. So I was determined to get some more stuff going on, and then when I ran into you, we were both on the same page.
Exactly. And it was not without a lot of work and, you know, like fortitude and sitting on those committees and getting people to see our vision. And Liz actually used the pop-up in a broader context, because a lot of those proposals that are submitted to new community programs, they're able to take and use them for other things. And it was, you know, moved into, you know, down in the loop, you know, use that pop-up. You know, concept.
Oh, yeah, I loved that being on State Lake. That was a wonderful spot.
You know, so it kind of spread out, and here we are still programming, and it's 2021. You know, and I recently came and visited you in Peoria, and it was a wonderful afternoon. And you took us on a tour, and we visited the studios there at the Contemporary Arts Center, where you had your exhibition with five African-American women, and you all honor the dignity and heroism of African-American women past and present in that exhibition. And that was, you know, we also, I came down with Suzetta Whittaker, and we visited the, we visited the Contemporary Arts Center, and we also visited the sculpture of Richard Prior that was right there on the corner. So Trish, thank you for joining us on Blog Talk Radio, and keep up all of the wonderful work that you're doing in the field, and hopefully you'll be showing and exhibiting again here in Chicago.
Brought to you by the Phantom Gallery Chicago Network, an artist-run project that exhibits in non-traditional gallery settings. The Phantom Gallery looks at how the city influences art and how artists transform the city by contributing to civic dialogue and quality of life. These installations produce creative conversations. I'm your host, Alpha Bhutan. Thank you for listening.
Well, thank you,
Hi,
Trish.
Alpha. Sorry, it went dead there.
Well, we're at the end of our call, and again, thank you for joining us on another episode of Creative Conversation.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it. Miss you.
And we look forward to another visit in Peoria. And thank you for giving Peoria a shout-out, because there is a lot of art that's happening there. And you're contributing to the landscape there and creating your art.
Thank you so much. Enjoyed this. Not as bad as I thought it was going to be. Take care.
I'm going to end the episode.
All right. Bye-bye.